You're listening to Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Screen Heroes. I am Ray. I'm one of your three weekly hosts. I am joined by the other two weekly hosts, Ryan.
Hello.
And Derek.
What's up?
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you guys?
Doing well.
Happy to be here, Derek. Happy to be here.
You don't look happy.
Oh, I'm thrilled.
You're thrilled?
You can't tell?
I can barely contain my
excitement.
That's
a thrilled face.
You know what they say, Ryan. Put on a happy face.
That's right.
Leave the building.
I think the building is his house.
It's a little Joker joke.
Still want him to leave.
For the audience. It's good stuff.
Let's not do that.
No Joker jokes?
Not yet.
Okay.
All right. So we are going to talk Joker tonight. We all saw it over the weekend. And
I saw it on Monday night, actually.
Okay. Sorry. I apologize. I'm fired.
Get your time frame.
I mean, that's
right,
part of the five-day box office, but not the opening weekend box office.
So. Right. My God. Didn't want to give him any extra money for the weekend.
That's fair. We did see it at 10 in the morning, so...
All right. So we saw this movie. All of us saw it. It happened. We are going to be discussing Joker, like I said, but first, we have some entertainment news.
Derek is the one in charge of all this
news.
Oh,
I'm kicking off the news.
Yeah, you are.
You're the one that has the list.
There's a big TV here. You can see it all right in front of your face.
It's not a list.
I didn't say it was a list. Anyway,
I wanted bullet points.
Let's move on. So first news, there's an update on the kind of reboot bringing back of Animaniacs. This was announced a little while back that Spielberg was going to be working with Hulu to bring back Animaniacs. I'm very excited about that, but it was announced today that all three, Yakko, Wakko, and Dot, all their voice actors are returning for the new show, and it will come out in 2020. Now, Ryan, I don't know. What's your opinion on Animaniacs? Are you an Animaniac?
It's fine.
It's fine.
I watched it, but I'm not nearly as obsessed and excited about it as everybody else seems to be. So,
Ray?
I'm on the same page.
What?
It's cool. It's a cool show, and I'm excited it's back. But, like, if it never came back, the original still existed, and it's on Hulu, and I have watched it multiple times. So,
like, I was going to say, like, you're a fan of
I would have been fine without new content, too. Like,
oh, wow, okay.
So, this is cool.
Okay. But I thought it was exciting. I thought it was cool that it's more of a revival than a, you know, a reboot, so to speak. We have the...
You're a revival.
All right. Let's move on to the next the next piece of business.
2 minutes
here.
In. I've already angered the gods.
Didn't take long.
I know, right?
So we're going to... Let's move on to some Disney stuff. So good news. Good news.
Is there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So Gina Davis, actor I really love. She has not acted as much recently, of course.
She was in Glow, which was great.
Right.
Davis season.
That was good. But, you know, prior to that, she was really 80s, 90s, and she did some amazing stuff. You know, she was in Beetlejuice and Earth Girls Are Easy and A League of Their Own, and always been a big fan. Anyway, long story short, she has a group that focuses on gender equality in media specifically. And her organization has a new AI technology that is designed to read through scripts and pitches and other writings and things like that and find areas of sexual bias, gender bias, things like that. And they have partnered, their first partner for this test pilot of the product is Disney of all places, which, I mean, that's a pretty good test pilot, is like, essentially the largest movie production company in the world.
Yeah.
So any thoughts on that, guys?
Well, there's a few things. Like, first of all, this is a really great step towards, you know, representation, equality and representation. And starting with Disney is just fantastic, because Disney has come under so much scrutiny for, you know, racial disparities and gender disparities in the past. So this is great. It doesn't necessarily mean that everything needs to be one way or another. I believe there's still a lot to be said about art that is made for certain secular groups, men, women, black, white. It doesn't really matter. I think there's still a need for all of that. So I don't think that's what this is eliminating. I think this is purposely going to reduce the amount of negative stereotypes or problematic tropes. And that's kind of what we're, what I'm hoping for. Like, I don't really need women to be accurately represented in every piece of art I take, but I also don't want to go into a movie and see, you know, rape used as motivation for a woman to be a better person or something like that. Like, I'm over those kind of things. So hopefully that's where this is going. Also, Gina Davis has done a lot of production stuff and a lot of behind the camera things over the last decade. So, you know, maybe we haven't seen her in front of the camera, but she's been very heavy handed behind.
Ryan, anything you'd like to add?
I think Rachel covered most of it. I am curious if it goes both ways. Like, if it's like, if it read the script for the Ghostbusters movie, it was like, wow, this is really, I mean, obviously this was done with intention on that movie, sure. But if it would be like, this is really heavy female and there's virtually no male interaction in this movie, you know, I'm curious. And it says they can use for LGBTQ plus and all kinds of other things. So I'll be curious to see how that all pans out.
Yeah, I mean, the way it's framed is it certainly seems like it's looking just for bias in
either way.
Writings. Right. And, you know, the idea is not that this is supposed to be like a rule of law kind of thing, just more of like, hey, this is where it sees some issues and it's kind of designed to show people the unconscious stuff, the subconscious stuff, the things that we might not know that we're doing. Whereas, like, you know, right, in Ghostbusters, the reboot, they knew, like, that was on purpose, yeah. Right.
I'm curious if there's going to be pushback. I feel like there's definitely going to be pushback from the people writing scripts and things like that if they write it specifically with things in mind, and then this scans it and is like, oh, no, you need to add three female characters if you want this to be, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Something like that.
I think the point isn't necessarily to stop intentional stuff as much as show ways we do it unintentionally.
Right, but I mean, so, if you're talking about a corporation and then they go, okay, well, you got to have at least 40% on this scale or whatever, then, you know what I mean? Because we all know that businesses are businesses and that they will set guidelines that everybody's expected to follow. So I'll be curious about how all that's handled.
Yeah, the follow-through is really how we're going to see all this. Like, the algorithm, the machine, the whatever is going to do this can say whatever you want about it, but the follow through is going to be a lot different. I imagine a lot of screenwriters will feel like their hands are tied if they're forced to go back and change things, like adding characters or removing characters,
or changing
as opposed
character
to just, you know, switching a line here or two. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm hoping this is. I'm hoping it fixes, like, problematic dialogue. I'm hoping that it, you know, the MCU is a fantastic example of this. We spent all of phase one and a lot of phase two with only one main female hero. And then it in phase two, it brought into Gamora and Scarlet Witch. So we got two more, and that,
and really only a one black hero, right?
Right,
like, and he was more of a sidekick than anything else.
Exactly.
His own movie.
Exactly. So, like, that is the problematic thing. More characters should have been introduced in the beginning, and it should have been, it was very, it, the balance was unfair, and now they're paying the price for it. They're 20 movies in and they just now had a female led film. And so, like, there's the problematic stuff. It could have been changed. It could have been altered. You know, I'm excited for the Black Widow movie next year, but I also feel like they kind of missed the boat on that. They killed her off, for God's sakes. Like, I know they have the time stone and they can do a lot of stuff, but, like, it just seems like too little too late at this point.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm hoping this rectifies. I'm not hoping that we see the entire change of movies or entire scope of movies change, but
that's fair.
Okay.
So this is kind of a good segue. We'll segue into the MCU stuff. So for those who've been following along, they have released box sets of the first two phases of the MCU.
And what if we haven't been following along? Is the story still for us?
I mean, actually, it's more for those people, really. So if you bought the first two phase box sets, you know, they were pretty cool. The first one came with the Tesseract in the briefcase. The second one was the orb from Guardians of the Galaxy. And they all came with just really nice artwork with the cases and stuff by Matt Ferguson, who's one of my favorites. Go check out his stuff. He does amazing, amazing work. So they have tasked him again to do the entire Infinity Saga collection. So it's all 23 movies, his artwork again. Anyone want to guess the price point for this?
This thing is over $500.
Yeah, I already knew the price point, yeah. So it's not really a guess. But
we didn't.
$549.99.
Yep.
For 23 films. So, you know, it's a big one if you've waited 11 years to buy your DVDs. I guess this would be your opportunity to do so, but it's a nice set. Of course, it comes with a bunch of stuff. There's a nice lithograph and things like that, but it does not look like they're doing a phase 3 box set, a dedicated phase right. 3 box set. There's been no announcements, no information on that. As someone who has the first two phase box sets, that's pretty disappointing. Because I don't think
you also already have that lithograph, don't you?
No, it's not. That's a new one for the specific box set.
Gotcha.
So
same artist though.
It includes all 23 Marvel films and a bonus disc. When you factor that together, it is $22 per disc.
I think it's dual discs. It's got a 4K disc and a Blu-ray disc.
So okay. Then what? $11 a disc?
Just saying.
That is nice.
It's cheaper than if you were to go out and buy each movie, probably. But some of these, you know, have gone down in price over the years. And if you get them their first week out, they're usually $20. But yeah, there's some nice bonus stuff here. You get a letter from Kevin Feige. It's probably not addressed to you. But
maybe.
You know, I don't want
it. I mean, I don't really see the point unless you just really want all the movies. All the bonus content that's on the extra disc is going to be on YouTube within like a week. So,
yeah, I mean, in 2019, it's hard. Like, I bought the phase box sets because, first off, I mean, that's
cool props with them.
Yeah, exactly. The cool props were the huge selling point, right? Because some of these came out a while ago. So, discs were still more important back then. You know, people like when the first one came out, I was, you know, still doing a lot of disc based stuff. That is significantly less now. And so, if there's no cool prop, there's no Infinity Gauntlet or whatever. And it's just the discs. I mean, I would imagine most people who wanted the discs already own most of them, right? Maybe you don't own phase 3 like me because you were waiting for that box set. But otherwise, you know, were you really waiting all the way till now for that Iron Man disc? Like, probably not, right? So I don't know. I mean, look, if you're out there and you want to get it, by all means, knock yourself out. It looks really nice. I'm sure that the quality is probably pretty good.
Yeah, I'll be passing on that.
I don't know. The collector in me kind of wants it, but yeah, I don't think I could ever really justify, you know, $500,000.
Well, if you want, you could go buy each of the Phase 3 movies individually and then also buy the Hasbro Infinity Gauntlet. And
make
then,
our own.
Yeah, you guys get a cool Infinity Gauntlet and
perfect
all the movies.
I love it. I like that idea. I mean, once you add tax, this set's over $600.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, so.
That's how tax works in America.
And probably other countries, too.
All right.
No, actually, most other countries have to build it into the price. If they have extra charges when they check out, a lot of the especially European and Asian countries are allowed to ask for refunds.
Wow.
Yeah.
Today I learned.
So, you guys want to talk about Scorsese a little bit?
I think I'll leave that to mostly you guys because you seem to feel very, well, at least Derek feels very strongly about it. So,
Scorsese he said that, you know, the superhero films aren't cinema. And
kind of similar to didn't Todd Phillips say something like that when he was promoting Joker?
Yes, he did.
He wanted to do a real movie or something like that.
Like
he snuck a real film into a comic book movie.
Robert Downey Jr. responded just earlier today, and he has a good middle of the road answer. Like Scorsese is obviously a wonderful filmmaker. He's done all kinds of crime and low life and mobster, and even did a movie about Jesus at one point. So, like, he's obviously talented, but I can see why he just immediately gets a little dejected or even jealous when these comic book films come out. And they're already, like, most of them will make just a ton of money based on, you know, name alone, let alone content. So it can steal box office numbers. It steals attention away from some other films. And while this isn't a problem for Scorsese, people are going to see The Irishman just like they saw The Departed and, you know, oh, God. What are some of his other films? What does he do? I don't know. Anyway.
This came up because he was promoting The Irishman, right, which is the new Netflix film starring Robert De Niro, and Joe Pesci came out of retirement. Mm-hmm. So
like, people are going to go see that. This isn't a problem for him. This is a problem for indie filmmakers whose movies are probably really good, but never see, you know, more than a week. In the spotlight.
Why make a comment like that? I mean, you get directors like Taika Waititi that are indie filmmakers that crossed over to Marvel, and he's not talking shit on either one.
You're totally right. I think it comes down to complete and utter jealousy.
Yeah.
Not like financial jealousy. He's obviously still getting Oscars and everything.
Taika came off what, Thor Ragnarok, and then went to Jojo Rabbit, right? Yeah. Now he's going back to Thor, and it's like, you know, I don't see why.
Well, it comes off as very elitist, and that's what I have a problem with. Like, I don't think he's jealous of the money. I think he's bothered by the popcorn concept. Right, this idea that
it's an amusement park ride or whatever.
Right, if a movie isn't real, raw, human, emotional bullshit, and it's just a fun, entertaining thing on a screen that for some reason doesn't count. And aside from the fact that that's just nonsense, and the word cinema has a definition and he can look it up, but it's also the fact that without those movies, without the billion-dollar films, his industry doesn't exist anymore. Okay, people aren't going to be able to prop up movie theater chains like AMC and all of these massive production companies for these smaller, low-budget, low-brow films that people aren't taking families to, they're not taking children to. I don't know for a fact, but I don't think any of his movies are underrated R. Maybe he's got some PG-13s in there, but he's
to really touch the human soul, you have to hit the R rating, Derek. I mean,
most of his films are mob films. Right. That's most of what he's really focused on. And there's obvious exceptions. He's done a ton of films, but he doesn't do family stuff. You're not taking the kids to these movies. And that's where movies make their money, when instead of bringing two people to the theater, you're bringing four people to the theater. Right. That's where the money comes in. And you're buying popcorn and you're having sodas because it's a night. It's an event. It's a good time. You're not there to watch something.
And you don't build a theater with 30 theaters because you're going to have Martin Scorsese movies, you know, playing on all the screens.
Exactly.
That's not how it works.
Not everything he's done are indie That's films. True. They're just their series. He does a lot of Oscar bait films, right? If we're going to, you know, trade, you know, little punches, like, he does Oscar bait stuff. Every movie he does, he wants to win an Oscar for. And I think that contrasts.
And
with
he usually does.
Then that's fair. Again, this, I'm not talking about the quality of his stuff. Obviously he knows what he's doing, but I think it's elitist. And I think that it basically dismisses the part of the industry that keeps the industry moving forward, that keeps it profitable, that keeps it exciting, and keeps people engaged.
Well, if you want to break it down, it is to have a very cheap analogy. It's like the artsy drama kid getting mad at the, you know, football games for bringing more money to the school than the plays do. Like, it's sure, the attention's not always on you, and that kind of sucks, but at the same time, the whole school benefits. So,
kind of,
yeah.
So, I don't know.
A lot of people have, you know, hit back with their own statements. Whedon, Samuel L. Jackson, James Gunn was the first one to comment back. So.
James Gunn just seemed, like, honestly disappointed in Scorsese for that. Because, I mean, basically he's insulting Gunn's entire career, you know. Yeah, he's done some other stuff, of course, but his name's really been made in the more, quote, popcorn flicks, which for some reason is an insult. I don't know.
Spielberg created the popcorn flicks. It was created with Jaws. That was the very first blockbuster. That's what cinema historians pinpoint as. And Spielberg has done his share of artsy-fartsy fucking films.
That's
so
true.
Like, let's not even debate that. And then there's the whole that we have seen over the last decade, these movies become more than just popcorn films. Like, you can't tell me that movies like The Dark Knight and Iron Man aren't also incredibly interesting human pieces. Like
Captain America, Winter Soldier.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
They are fantastic pieces.
Outside of the genre.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's true.
Yeah. No, I'm totally with you. And I mean, people know the theater industry for films like Star Wars, mm-hmm. right?
Popcorn films.
And Toy Story and Independence Day, right? Jurassic Park. Those are the tentpole films. Yeah. So, all right. Well, anyway, that's our rant on that nonsense. We are kind of near the 20-minute mark, so maybe we should move on to our review.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot to talk about with Joker. It's full of talking points. So we are going to go on a very quick break for our Twitch watchers, and Facebook will just have to deal with us talking some more. Hello, everyone. This is Ray from the Heroes Podcast Network. Currently, you've probably heard me on a show called Screen Heroes, where we discuss movies and TV shows about superheroes, sci-fi, and a little bit of fantasy. Well, I love fantasy so much, I am starting a brand new podcast about fantasy television series. We are going to review these series in a bit more detail than what Screen Heroes usually does. We'll discuss multiple episodes for a whole continuous arc and then move on to another series. Spellbound will review new shows like The Witcher, Good Omens, Carnival Row, and Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance. We're also going to look back at previous shows such as American Gods and Avatar: The Last Airbender, old miniseries from the 90s like Leprechauns and the 10th Kingdom, and we're going to do a movie here and there, maybe even a little bit of fantasy upcoming news, who knows. You'll be able to follow Spellbound at SpellboundCast on Twitter for the latest fantasy news about the show, about the upcoming shows that we'll be discussing. You can also listen to us Fridays, coming in September. All right, guys, thank you for listening to that ad. Thanks for sticking with us.
Hopefully
we're going
to
continue.
Feel like listening to everything we do now.
Yes, listen to all of it. Mwahaha. Okay, so we're going to talk about Joker. This movie debuted this last weekend, starring Joaquin Phoenix, Robert De Niro, Zazie Beetz, and it was directed by super douche Todd Phillips.
So real quick, we'll just go over the box office numbers because in this case, it's actually pretty relevant. The movie did very well. It made just over $96 million its opening weekend here domestically in the United States. No, it was no contest. Number
but
two,
real films don't make that money.
Number two was Abominable at $11.9 million in its second week. And in its third week at third place is Downton Abbey, just under $8 million. So there was nothing in the top 10 that even, you know, came close to Joker. Over to date, it's made $258 million worldwide.
Do we know what the budget was?
55 million. So it's made over about five times its budget at this point, which is obviously a financial success. No way around that. So, you know, it did really well. It is the largest October opening weekend ever for mm-hmm. a film in any genre of any kind. For some perspective, Venom did take it last year, but Joker beat it out by $16 million. So it's a pretty large jump. And as far as DC goes, it is actually DC's seventh largest opening weekend film ever, behind Wonder Woman and then Man of Steel, Suicide Squad, The Dark Knight, The Dark Knight Rises, and BVS. With Justice League, Aquaman, and Watchmen filling out the top 10 at the bottom there. So it did very, very well in its opening weekend. Where do you guys want to start with this one?
Also, first and foremost, there a lot of controversy around this film. And I do kind of want to talk about Venom because I believe that there are some connections back and forth. I think it's a good comparison. But we always do our spoiler-free reviews first. So we're going to do that from here on out. There will be spoilers. Got it? We'll do our quick little reviews and then after spoilers.
Okay, so not spoilers yet.
Right.
Okay.
Correct.
Ryan, why don't you go first? You saw it most recently.
By one day.
By one day. It was fine. Like, the third act was pretty good, I think. The first two acts were not as great for me. Overall, I think that the performance, Joaquin Phoenix's performance alone is probably worth seeing the movie for if you're into this type of movie. But otherwise, if you're not sure that you're going to like it, then you can probably catch it at home and when it comes out, and it's probably fine. But the third act is very strong. It ends on a strong note, but I don't think it's enough to pull up the rest of the film for me.
That's fair. Ray, what about you?
This movie wasn't really for me. I will piggyback on top of that and say that Joaquin was incredibly great. Even De Niro's pretty good. You know, he has a much smaller role than what I originally thought he was going to be when he was announced for this. But yeah, he and Joaquin are pretty great. Not really for me. And I'll go into a bit more detail what points aren't, but I'm glad I saw it. I don't take it back. I don't think I really want to see it again.
Fair enough. For me, I mean, just in general, so those who've been listening to this show would know that I wasn't actually looking forward to seeing the movie anyway. I was kind of not into it to begin with, but...
Yeah, I didn't even know we were reviewing it this week.
Sorry.
Because you guys are so... Well, more you. We're wishy-washy on it than anything else.
Sorry. But yeah, I mean, in general, it was basically exactly what I thought it was going to be, in all honesty. It was slower than I thought it was going to be. Phoenix does do a very good job. I mean, if he's nominated for Best Actor, I wouldn't be surprised. I can't say he's guaranteed because I haven't seen all of the other films that, you know, are going to have somebody nominated. But so he's very good. But overall, I found it kind of slow, a little boring at times. And I found it to be just exactly what I thought it was. Honestly, I'm not mad that I saw it, but if we had just not reviewed it and I hadn't ever seen it, I think I'd be fine, which is, you know, that's what that is. So let's do, let's go into our spoiler warning here real quick. We have a comment in our chat on Twitch, so we can call that out. I'm going to paraphrase here a little bit, but this person, Amy Chibi, thinks that it's a good character movie. But that this Joker is not a criminal mastermind at all, really. And that, any of the Batman we've seen, I'm assuming they mean in live action, would be able to take this Joker down pretty easily. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. I mean, he's not a criminal mastermind at all. There's no real emphasis on that. I mean, he commits crimes, but he's not like leading a gang or a group of people or anything like that. And he's not, you know, a physical threat, but Joker rarely is.
Yeah, he never really goes toe to toe with Batman in terms of fighting, unless you're talking Injustice, and that's just a weird video game universe.
No, but you know, there's not a whole lot of planning and thought out stuff that happens in most of the movie. A lot of it is, you know, very knee jerk, like emotional reaction stuff. You know, whereas the Joker historically is shown to be, you know, very chaotic. An anarchist, but very calculated at the same time.
Yeah, and I think even the worst Batman, Christopher Nolan's Batman, would have no problem beating the Joker. I do think that it's important to note that this is like an origin movie. Mm-hmm. You get to see like 8 seconds of the probably more than that, but like less
call
than 10 minutes
yeah.
of what you would call Joker, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, it's hard to judge that. I thought the same thing, but then I was also thinking, because I was talking to a friend earlier, and I was like, yeah, you really don't get to see the Joker do that much. And yes, there's no criminal mastermind anything with what he does when he's the Joker, but it's the first 10 minutes of him like realizing that this is who he is and showing the world that this is who he is. So, you know,
Yeah.
I agree to an extent, but it's hard to say for sure.
All right. Well, then let's dive into things. Where anyone have an area that they would like to start?
So let me just start first and foremost. That is one of my big problems with this film. First of all, Gotham, the Waynes, and the Joker are such side notes that I feel like this movie started out like you could wipe those things away and you're still left with a damn good story. And I'd almost like it a lot more if it had nothing to do with Batman or comic books or anything, because that's my huge problem, is that this isn't the Joker. They made his laughing thing a neural tick, and they pushed a mentally ill man to his absolute breaking point, and nobody around him, like, he was never in a good nurturing environment. He could never really trust anybody around him. So, like, he goes off the deep end and hurts people and has zero remorse about it afterwards, which is a huge symptom of psychosis, is feeling zero empathy. So you remove Joker, you remove the signs in the background that say Arkham or Gotham, and this is a film set in the late 1970s, early 80s about a mentally ill man down on his luck in New York City. And I think I might have liked it a bit better that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I don't think that would have made me like it anymore. Like I'm totally okay with this being separate from quote DC canon or whatever. I really wasn't looking at it through those lenses at all. I have a lot of story problems with the movie that we'll get to later. I do want to mention the Gotham thing is kind of interesting though. This is the most normal Gotham I think has ever been portrayed, at least maybe outside of like the Adam West 60s Batman, because I know it's modeled off of this, but I just kept forgetting we were in Gotham and thinking it was New York City. You know, it's the trash strike, which was a real thing, and the buildings all look like, you know, downtown New York kind of stuff. And I just kept looking at it and I had to remind myself that this is Gotham. I don't know. What about you guys?
I mean, yeah.
I didn't put that much thought into it. I mean, yes, you're right. It does look more like a normal city than other Gothams have, for sure. The laughter being a tick, I actually liked that.
Yeah.
Because I feel like with Joker, it's hard to identify with him as a person. Like, you don't... you sometimes forget that he's just a guy, right? Like,
yeah.
He's more of a monster than anything else. And so relating him to a human that he has this, you know, that this is a tick for him. You know, you see him getting the crap beat out of him, not in this movie, but like in other cinema by Batman getting all his face punched in and whatever and laughing about it. And you can't really relate to that. But like, I guess a lot of people could probably more relate to the fact that like it's a condition. Not just like he thinks this is funny that he's getting the crap beat out of him. For me, it was easier to accept that. I don't care that much about Joker as a character,
but
so it doesn't bother me that that was changed.
Is it problematic to relate to Joker?
I mean, any villain, any good villain, you need to relate with on some level. I think, because if you don't, then it's like why Killmonger, right, was a great villain. I'm not comparing this Joker to Killmonger. I'm just saying that there's a lot of the great villains, when you think of the best villains, they weren't like mustache twirling, like, you know, guys that don't have any. The worst villains in the MCU are the ones that you can't relate to at all and can't understand why they became the way they are. And this Joker, at least, like, he seemed human and seemed like somebody... you know, you could see people in your life, unfortunately, that have been maybe in positions where they were on a low point in their life, or you know somebody with a tick, or you know, so there's ways that you can make it more human. For me, anyway, it was less of an issue than it was for you guys, I think. If that makes any sense. No, I kind of rambled there.
I'm not... My issues are not so much with this version of the Joker doesn't line up with other versions of the Joker. That's not really where my problems lie.
You know, like I'm not saying that's where most of your problems lie. I just think
a lot
of people had issues with that.
I know a lot of people did. And I mean, they... Maybe we're, you know, the three of us are just a little more plugged in. Like, I was fully aware that this was going to be a very different story and not connected to anything else. And so I went into the movie knowing all of that. And if I know that going into it, then I'm fine. It's, you know, it's when you're telling me it's connected and then you make a bunch of changes that I get bothered. I think my issues really surround my issues deal with, my biggest problems I want to save until later in the conversation. So I want to talk around them a little bit, but Todd Phillips came out a lot in defense of his movie. Again, he's the director, and you know, people were concerned, myself included, that this movie was going to in some way glorify somebody who is mentally ill or mentally unstable and glorify their violence against other people, feeling justified to do whatever it is that they do. And he was very adamant that that was not the case. And he wouldn't shut up about that not being the case and us being overreactors. And he was full of shit, in my opinion. The climax of the film is Arthur standing on a cop car that's been destroyed, surrounded by a mob of clowns who are burning the city to the ground with like his hands up in the air, like, you know, just taking in all of the glory with his followers around him. And if that isn't the glorification of that character, then it's not possible to glorify that character then. Cause the rest of the movie is just, this guy he's sad. He's depressed. He's poor. He has a very weird relationship with his mother that's unhealthy. And he has no real friends. He has no real social life. He's beat up and pushed around and bullied. And so 2/3 of the movie are just really depressing and sad. And then he snaps, right? And it's basically a 60-minute explanation for why he did what he did. And then the city essentially rewards him for it by him becoming the symbol of this massive movement to burn the city down with any violent means necessary, culminating in the death of Bruce's parents in the scene that we've seen a million times over already. I think that's my second biggest problem with the movie.
I'm tired of mentally ill people being used as cold killers. You know, I know a lot of people with mental illness. I myself have depression, anxiety, PTSD, a few other things that just add up here and there. So, like this man had circumstantial weight added to him his entire life. He said flat out that he's never felt happy a moment in his life, that all he has are negative thoughts. And, you know, a person like that can be driven to extremes, but the Joker is historically so violent, so cold, so lacking in empathy that I was really hoping they weren't going to go with somebody who was just sick and had a really, you know, crap life, you know, because it's not always the case. And it definitely paints mentally ill people in a poor light. And it's why anytime there is a mass shooting, people immediately go with, oh, well, we need more mental health and we need to focus on mental health. And that's not always the case. So
that's a fair point, and I don't really have anything to say about that. That's more of like a personal opinion about like the usage of mental health people.
Absolutely. Like, so that, I'm not going to try and dispute that. This is completely subjective.
As far as Derek's point of the glorification of this, I was worried about that too. And even watching the movie, and I started to feel myself empathize with the character, right? And when it's sad in the beginning, and the things that are happening to him are sad. And
you watch a man get beat down. It's,
and just driven to the worst. And yes, so you empathize with Arthur. But this is where I think we disagree a little bit. I don't think it was glorifying what it was. I think that it was very clear in the sense that this guy was still doing bad things and a villain. He was the it's a weird line to walk, and maybe not one that should have been walked, but he's clearly the protagonist of the movie. But that doesn't necessarily mean he's the hero of the movie or, you know, the good guy of the movie, because there's no real good guys in this movie. No. Other than maybe like the cops that were just trying to do their job and got killed, or yeah. Alfred that was trying to protect Bruce. You know, there's no real good guys. And so I thought it was pretty clear in the I didn't come out going, man, if I just kill some cops and like roll some cars, then I'm going to be a hero among all these weirdos wearing clown masks or anything like that. Maybe there's, I'm not saying that there's nobody that would feel that way, because there's probably a lot of people that would feel that way. But I thought it was very clear that even in the end, he was still the bad guy. And it didn't really, I mean, I can definitely see your side of it. So I'm not trying to argue with you about the whole thing.
I
know.
I think my problem is there wasn't a good guy whatsoever. Thomas Wayne was so smarmy and problematic.
I actually like that.
I did too. Because they're all the Waynes are always painted as saints, and that is
it's because you're always seeing them through Bruce's eyes. Yeah. I think, and that's so I liked seeing them as this is not through Bruce's eyes. They are just dicks.
No, mm-hmm. I mean, the only other person I would add to the list as a good person might be his coworker who witnessed. Can't remember his
Gary.
Name.
Gary. It was Gary.
You know, like, I guess he's a good guy. I mean, he doesn't report Arthur, I'm assuming. I don't know if that makes him a good guy or a bad guy for not reporting a murder. It's kind of complicated, but he seemed like he was just trying to be a nice person.
I feel like he did report him because the cops were going after him when he was on his way to the studio.
Yeah, but
so
like,
they were already going on after him.
So they were already trying to get him. Don't you think if like a murder had been reported, they would have brought more people?
I think between the time that Gary left and the time that everything happened on TV was probably only a matter of hours. And, you know, even back then, it's not like our penal system was fast. Like, he could have been there at a station, like, reporting this for hours, taking news. So,
yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Like, we don't know.
So we don't know.
But his character just kind of falls off. But
he
yeah,
might be
like,
a good guy.
De Niro's character is an absolute ass. And, you know, we've seen plenty of people over the last couple of years map out just exactly how much billions of dollars really are, and how anybody who is a billionaire is basically hoarding wealth from the populace. So, you know, the Waynes aren't looking very good at this point either. And there's, I
and
think
we never
that's,
get to see Martha.
That's
really
a huge,
anyway, so.
Well, that's a huge problem. Like, if nobody is a good guy in this movie, then you have no moral pinnacle to say that the Joker's actions were wrong. You know, I'm not saying that Murray needed to have his head blown off in the middle of his show, but that dude needed a swift punch to the face.
Well, I think your moral pinnacle in this movie is yourself. Like, there's clear, because you're right, there's nobody in the movie, so you just have to know. Like, as long as you know that killing people is bad.
Well, so I think that's part of my point, though, is that if you're one of those people who thinks other people do deserve to die, and you're watching that character and you see that, you know, maybe glorify is, it's a semantic thing and it's not, that's not the appropriate word, but you see a guy who on the subway, he shoots those
rewarded.
Guys and he's self-defense at first, right? He's getting beat up and he shoots those guys in self-defense. And I think most of us, if that's the only thing he does, look at that and go, man, that's horrible that he had to do that, but those guys could have killed him. Right. But that's not where it goes. He chases down the third guy and makes sure he dies. And then he, you know, kills his coworker, and it just escalates from there. And as it escalates, the support around him actually grows to the point where they stage a car wreck to rescue him from the police and raise him above the entire crowd of clowns. And so if you're in the audience and you are a person who thinks that, you know, not only is being a billionaire wrong, but those people deserve to die, and you believe that, and there are people out there that believe that, and then you watch this movie, that character is rewarded for thinking that. And that's my problem. My problem is that this is a person who has failed by the system, And that's kind of glossed over. Like, it is brought up that, like, you know, his counseling funding is lost and things like that.
I thought that was, like, a super heavy-handed message of the movie. Like, one of the main themes of the movie that was he's trying to be clever and, like, have a theme in the movie. But then it's, like, so heavy-handed that it doesn't make any sense.
That stuck with me a lot because that is, in the United States, if you're an American citizen and you're listening to this podcast, you can look up exactly how much social services and public welfare groups have been defunded. Like, that is a literal problem that we have currently right now. That, like, healthcare loses money every single day. Pharmaceutical companies jack up their prices every single day, and Americans are suffering because of it. Mental health and physical health are, you know, just completely ignored, and people are desperate and dying. So that stuck with me as a really good message.
The way it was delivered was the problem for me. It was just, like, super heavy-handed. Yeah. Like, if you're gonna be somewhat subtle about it and, like, let the audience figure out that, well, this is a bad thing.
I wish they
saying,
were...
"Oh, how am I supposed to get my medication now? I stopped
taking
my medication."
The three of us took it completely different ways. I find that really interesting.
I wish they would have shown other people suffering because of it. To be completely honest, I wish he was in, you know, not just one-on-one but also group therapies too. And like, if she had made that announcement to multiple people and said, well, you all have to, we can't help any of you. Counseling's gone. We can't get any of your medication or something like that. Then you see multiple people's reaction. He is, by the time she says that to him, he just looks like, well, of course it is. Of course. Like, the whole world has always let me down. Why wouldn't it be? But if we had seen, like, somebody who was making a lot of progress and his life was on an uphill, then I could have, I don't know. I feel like it would have added more depth to the story if you see more people affected by this and not just him.
Well, and the way I took it is kind of, I saw what you saw, Ryan, but took it a different way. Whereas I thought it happened so quickly and, like, so much was done in those scenes so fast that it was thrown in so that way Todd Phillips could stand up and say, but look, we were talking about how the system failed him, when, like, if that's what you really wanted to do and paint this as a story of we need to stop failing people, I think that's a very different message and a very different movie. But
oh yeah,
those scenes,
I think that's what he was going for, but yeah, they were,
it doesn't feel that way.
No.
It feels like they were added in just so he could say that that's what they were doing, because the rest of the movie, the movie focuses on so many other things for such extended periods of time that becomes, like, this leftover thing of, like, yeah, maybe that was an impact, you know.
But it's not just the system. Like, let's not just focus on that, because that is not what led Arthur Fleck to this life of violence and hypercrime. By the end of the movie, you realize that there was nobody in his life that he could trust. You know, for a while, you think he has a relationship with a woman down the hall who I don't think we get her name or not. I think it's just his neighbor.
Were you guys surprised by that twist? Because I've heard people on both sides of it.
So
I'm curious where you guys are at.
This starts to begin what the crux of the problem is for me. I knew some of the movie was probably going to be in his head when he, like, knocks on her door and, like, goes in and they start making out or whatever. I was very surprised by that. I thought that was really weird. I did think she had gone to the comedy show. I thought that had happened and they had a date kind of thing. But when you find out that that relationship didn't happen at all, like, at all. And then you find out that his mother's been lying to him this entire time. And then you find out that, you know, maybe Thomas Wayne is lying to him the entire time. And then you find out that at the end of the movie, he's in that Arkham hospital talking to somebody. Yeah, the actual issue with the movie is Maybe none of that happened. Maybe all of it happened. Maybe all of it happened differently. Maybe none of it did at all in any way.
Maybe Todd Phillips just played American Psycho on repeat for 6 months.
Do you have, but American Psycho is a better movie than this.
Do you have a problem with American Psycho? Because it ended in a very, or it had a very similar twist.
So here's why I don't have the same problem with American Psycho. In American Psycho, there are certain things. First off, there is a narrator in American Psycho. Yeah. Calling your protagonist the narrator when he doesn't narrate doesn't really work for me. So there is no, like, what's the term? Unreliable narrator. There's no unreliable narrator in Joker because there's no narrator in Joker. You have an unreliable point of view in Joker, and that's a different statement. In American Psycho, your narrator is unreliable, but there are things that happen that prove that certain things actually occurred in that movie in certain ways. So there are things you know are in his head, there are some things that are questionable, and there are some things that you know did happen. Versus in Joker, there's not a single line in that movie, not a single shot in that movie that I know happened. Not one. And that means that the story completely isn't anything. Right? The scene in the bathroom with Thomas Wayne. Did that scene happen? Did it happen differently? Did it happen that way? Who lied? Who didn't lie? Is he Thomas Wayne's son? Is his mom just, you know, a liar? Was the entire time, was he in the hospital the entire movie? And it's, you know, the waking up in the shower on Dallas and the whole movie never even happened. I don't know. Do you guys know?
No, I can't definitively say.
So, no, I mean, I'm not one of the people that made the film, so it's hard to say for sure. But as a viewer, I feel like for me it was clearer what happened, and maybe I'm completely wrong on that. But I didn't have an issue determining what I thought was real and what was wrong, what was not real.
So was he Thomas Wayne's son or not?
No.
Why not?
Because there were adoption papers that he found.
But Thomas Wayne's a billionaire, and if he wanted to bury that, sure, he could have made it paperwork, possible, right?
Yeah, but I don't think that's a problem with Arthur Fleck. I think that's a problem with Thomas Wayne and that story. I don't think he imagined any of that. I think that he could. Sure, you're going to keep bringing up he could have, and I get that.
We saw him imagine very real things. So when Thomas Wayne tells him it's fake.
But the things that he seemed to imagine, for me, all seemed fairly fantastical. But maybe not all of them, but a lot of them. It was pretty easy for me to tell what I thought was real and what wasn't. And I could be wrong.
So at the end of the movie, do you think that he was just arrested at some point after the mob and he's just retelling the story?
And then he killed the lady in the room and walked out, yes.
Okay.
No, I don't think he was retelling the story. I think that he just got caught and that's just how they ended.
Oh, they just cut to some session. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. But, Ray, what about you?
It's impossible to definitively say. Like, yeah, of course. You're right about that.
Absolutely. Like, when you put it in those words, then yeah, absolutely. Now, there were a couple points where I thought that a single mom living in a poverty, violent neighborhood wouldn't go after somebody as unstable like that. It, like, on the date. When she says that she thinks the guy is a hero, I was like, that seems so out of character. Like, a person like that would want to protect their child at all costs, and being with somebody that you don't really know and you let them into your home, it just didn't click for me. So when it turned out to be completely imagined by him, or, you know, a product of his desire, then I felt a little bit better about Zazie Beetz character throughout the whole thing. I was like, well, that makes way more sense. But you're right, he's an unreliable source. Everything could be wrong. We don't know if he was adopted or not, because we saw that picture with the TW on the back. We don't know if his mom was also just full of shit and concocted all of this. She's obviously a very terrible mother, because there are records of him being, like, chained to a radiator. So that kind of abuse at that young of an age can completely destroy your mentality, and you could be a very unreliable, not adjusted person. So
in regards to Zazie Beetz's character, I knew that that had to be the case. Partially, I want to say I'm clever, but it's not really that so much as there was a bunch of people talking about all the twists. And, you know, so I was looking for something like that. But, like, the scene that gave it away to me immediately was the scene that you were mentioning where he walks in, and I think you mentioned it, where he walks in and just instantly starts making out with her. I was like, this is totally fantastical. There's no way this happened.
So I think the only reason I followed along with it is because it's a Joker movie. It's not just a random character movie, and the Joker has had love interests like Harley, who went along with a character like that.
But she was pretty out there herself, and Zazie Beetz was, when you saw her character, she seemed very grounded and normal, so that's
I think having it be a Joker film colored a few things for me, though. You know, for example, I thought the twist was going to be that Arthur ends up being Bruce's brother, because in the comics,
actually, was kind of has a brother that would be interesting
in certain lines, right? And I was like, so they're gonna go that route, and that would be really interesting. That would be really interesting, especially if Arthur knew it and Bruce never knew it, right? And that would explain like the whole thing, right, of tormenting his brother for all those years. So I kind of glossed over the relationship, I think. But the problem is that we see all of these scenes through his eyes, then we get to see them again later, not happening, right? But then it just calls into question anything else that we saw. Was he really attacked on the subway, or did he just picture himself being attacked on the subway? Did he just murder three innocent guys, or did they really attack him? You know, what about his coworker, right? Did he really give him the gun, or did he get a gun some other way? You know, it just throws the whole thing into question for me.
I think we understand that. So, I mean, we get that point.
We get what you're saying.
It just ruins any semblance of meaning for me.
Yeah, I didn't have nearly as much of a problem with that as you did personally, but
because like the way he acts on the show, when he actually goes on Marie's show, the way he's acting on that show is kind of how he acts on the date that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he plans this stuff out in his head ahead of time. It shows him rehearsing what he's going to do on the show.
I know, but I just mean, did that happen?
We get it, Derek. You're questioning everything.
But
we got
it. It means that it just takes away any of the power for me. I don't know.
What did you think of the scene? Of course, we had to see with Bruce's parents dying again in the alleyway.
Right.
Oh, me?
Sure.
I mean, on the one hand, I am glad they didn't make it the Joker. I do love when it's Joe Chill and not Joker. Yeah. On the other hand, we get it, man. The Waynes always have to die. We get it. It's so overdone at this point. Like, what are you going to do now? Are you going to wait like 5-10 years and do a sequel where he faces Batman as an elderly man? Like, can we not?
Well, he's only like 40, right?
Yeah. And Bruce Wayne is 8.
Yeah. But I mean, when he's 60, he becomes Batman at like 18, right? So, you know, when he's 60, Batman will almost be 30.
He doesn't become Batman at 18. Like, that's what Gotham did. But in the comics, it's widely considered that at 18, he left home, trained a bunch.
Training.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's a training.
And when
Batman.
He came back, he was 30. It was the whole Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ in the Bible disappears from 12 to 30. Okay. So, like,
all right, well,
Jesus
then.
Christ was going to Tibet to train in martial arts.
I'm glad you brought up Gotham, though, because coming out of this movie, I was like, man, so the 90% audience score on Rotten Tomato, so many people had issues with the fact that in Gotham, all these characters, not all of these characters, a lot of these characters are young adults or just all, you know, adults, 20,
yeah.
mid-20s, 30s, whatever. And Batman was a teenager.
A child, yeah.
Or a kid even, through some of it. But then in this movie, it's great, guys. We love it. Like, make up your mind, right? Are you going to like it or are you going to hate it?
I had a problem with both.
I know you did. Talking about in general, like, obviously Gotham got a lot of seasons, so some people were watching it. But
I was a little confused when they first said that Thomas Wayne could be his dad. I was like, that looks so weird. Like, and maybe it's just because Joaquin looks so bad through this. Yeah. Like, he's a normally handsome guy, and he looks so bad. He looks so aged at this point. I had to just look up their age because Brett Cullen was born in 1956 and Joaquin Phoenix was born in 1974. So yeah, totally. He could totally be his dad. That's fine. But like in the film, they didn't look like they looked like maybe 3 years apart. And I was like, I don't like this.
And Joaquin Phoenix always makes me uncomfortable. I don't know why. Like, just something, because I've seen his personality on talk shows and things like that, and he's just a weird guy.
Well, he
kind of like Crispin Glover, right? Where you see them and they're no real life, they're very weird.
Phoenix
too.
Has a tragic backstory to go along with it. His family raised him and his four siblings in a cult. He was the one that found his older brother River dead and called the cops, and he was like 14, 15 at the time. Like, so he has the weird tragic backstory to go along with the eccentric personality. Crispin Glover, I have no idea what his deal is.
Well, so to kind of the point about the time frame, though, Todd Phillips has an answer for you, Ryan. He said this might not be the Joker. This might be the character the Joker's inspired
by. Okay,
so
that's what they did on Gotham, too.
Yeah.
Where they, like, initially had the character, because they couldn't use Joker.
Right.
They had the character that was inspiring all these other Jokers, but then it turns out that original Joker didn't really die and then came back to life, and he's actually the Joker. And so, whatever, like, it ended up being a really great Joker on Gotham, so I don't have
and
anything
that's,
to say.
I'm not making a statement on Gotham.
Yeah, it's a little weird and whatever.
But again, it's feels like hedging, right? Like, you write this movie where you throw in the system failing and the who knows what's real, and you also throw in, well, maybe he's not even really the Joker, guys. Like, then what movie did you make? What the fuck is this?
The only way I can ever see him going up against Batman is if, like, in Wonder Woman, there's been the rumors that there's like a flashpoint type of event that occurs, and then the two universes are merged, something like that. That's about the only way I could see it happening.
There are a lot of villains in the Batman universe that are manipulative or boss-like villains that don't actually do the fighting. You know, Penguin, Riddler, and Joker could all be 20, 30 years older than Batman, and it's not a problem. It's when you get like Bane, who's 20, 30 years older, or, you know, Poison Ivy shouldn't be 20, 30 years older. So, like, I don't have a problem with Joker being this much older than Bruce. I really don't. I have a problem if in the potential sequel that Joaquin is up going forward, that they have, like, Batman beating up an old man. Like,
right.
I don't want that to happen.
Maybe Batman will detect.
Right. Oh, God. Batman is never detected in any
That's
of
true.
The live-action films.
Just Adam West.
Just Adam West.
He's a great detective, Adam West.
He's a great leaper. Too.
No, that's great detective work. I do want to say, we haven't gotten to talk about it much, but Joaquin Phoenix's physical transformation, I thought the scenes where he was shirtless and it was like
it was
uncomfortable. He was actually using his body like in weird ways, and they all made me uncomfortable, but I don't know what it was, but man, it was just like you could see how bad he was messed up just in the way like he moved his body, and like, yeah. I don't know, it translated very well to me, and that doesn't usually happen, but
he did a phenomenal job. I mean, he looked so emaciated, like basically what they had to do digitally to Robert Downey Jr. in Endgame, you know, like Phoenix did to himself almost. And I mean, I hope he doesn't end up screwing himself up and giving himself like diabetes or something like that. That has happened to
like
other actors.
Tom Hanks did with Philadelphia and Castaway.
Yeah, like that does happen. I hope that doesn't happen, because he's just trying to do his art, and I appreciate that. But man, it was creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. Him and the cinematography, those are my
two
shining.
Cinematography blew me away. Yeah. Every scene was a beautiful shot. There wasn't one where I was like, this is just a mediocre shot. Literally everything. If that doesn't get the nom or the win for an Oscar, then I'd be very disappointed.
That's
because
fair.
It was gorgeous.
Yeah, I mean, those two pieces were very, very good for me. I don't know. What else?
Oh, I mean... Joaquin Phoenix was surprisingly a much better dancer. Joker could keep rhythm, and I was pretty impressed with how he danced, to be completely honest. I didn't see it coming.
And it was a little creepy,
yeah.
You know, seeing...
I think like the costume
unsettling.
And the way that he looked, like if I just take the rhythm part of it, I'm like, man, that guy's been through dance lessons before. He's played music. He knows how rhythm works and stuff. But yeah... You add in the fact that you can see his ribs and he has bruises all
right.
over his back, or, you know, the costume when he's dancing down the stairs, like that is, that adds to the creep level. If he was in like a normal tux or something and he was his shape that he was for You Were Never Really There or Her, then
with
it
same
wouldn't.
Mustache.
Same mustache. Yeah. Totally. Should we talk about that dance scene? Like, should we mention the Gary Glitter thing, or we just...
I mean, I think you've already brought it up, so... Okay. Yeah.
All right, so I will admit I was completely aware of the Gary Glitter trial when it happened, and I paid attention, and I never thought I was going to hear that song played by a popular thing. Like, the Chiefs used it. We're all Kansas City-esque ish residents, and so we grew up hearing that song at Chiefs stadiums or in the back of Chiefs games. And they, after Gary Glitter was found and convicted as a pedophile, you know, Chiefs stopped using it. So I haven't heard that song in public, and I will say, because the trailer shows scenes of him dancing down the stairs to music, they easily could have put in any song behind that. I guarantee you he wasn't actually dancing to Rock and Roll Part 2. But it took me out of it, and I was like, that was in poor taste.
So I recognized the song, of course, but I had no idea who that was or anything like that. But after looking into it, I mean, it happened in 2015. This movie wasn't even in, you know, production yet, you know, but it was recent enough where if you were like, well, what song should we put in our movie? Let's put in this one. You did any Googling at all, you would have found something about this. So when you're a movie studio, especially a big one like Warner Brothers, you have the resources to just kind of double check what you're going to be paying royalties on. To not do that just seems irresponsible.
Yeah, I'm kind of in with you in the sense that I had no idea about the lawsuit or whatever it was, the trial. But even watching the movie in that scene, being a Kansas City native my whole life, I only knew that song from Chiefs games. Like, I assumed that it was a song made for football.
Oh, that's
like,
funny.
I literally still in my head, when I hear that song, I'll immediately think Chiefs game. Yeah. And that's the only context I have for it. So hearing it in this context was really weird to me and didn't make any sense.
It was certainly like out of left field for the rest of the film, tonally.
Yeah. And like the soundtrack for most of the film is pretty good. So when that came on, I was like, this doesn't make any sense to me.
They had a lot of Sinatra playing in the background, and I don't know why they couldn't have another Sinatra song. Like,
good question. I don't know.
I also don't know what
they're trying to be so edgy. They could do what was that song that he had about like when he dies? There was a whole Sinatra song. I can't remember the name of it.
No,
but
you're totally right. Like, there are some ones that would have been the same level of creep factor that we wanted it to be. This didn't have a creep factor.
No, it was just out of place.
Like, the creep factor for me is like, ugh, that guy, that's bad. That's bad research. That's bad. Just, ugh, it just drew me out of it. And then, of course, it's a sports anthem. Like, it's been turned into a sports anthem. Mm-hmm. Chiefs weren't the only ones that used it. So, it felt completely out of place.
The connotation was just weird. Even if you didn't know, like, I didn't know whose song it was, you know, it was still weird. But
something I brought up in chat when we talked about this stuff is that I think that the reason why the box office is so high for this movie is because of the controversy.
Oh,
I saw a lot of comments online that were like, go see it before it gets pulled out of theaters, and like, it's not going to get pulled out of theaters. Like, that's not really a thing. Like, even Watchmen, when they had the trouble with the penis on screen, they just digitally changed it and sent out the new film like the next week. So, you know, it's not going to get pulled out of theaters, but I definitely think there's going to be a big drop in the next week.
I agree.
Because
everyone rushed out to go see it, and this is not a movie.
You don't go see it multiple times,
right? This is not Endgame. You know, you're not going to go see it.
It was like Logan for me, where not as good as Logan, obviously, but in the sense that you don't leave the theater like super happy and chipper, which is usually why I go to the movie theater. I usually want to be inspired, or I want to be...
Oh, no, this brought down my whole mood for like the rest of the day. Yeah. I was pretty affected.
Lucky for me, there wasn't much left to the rest of the day, and I was sitting by myself at home, so I didn't have to worry about that.
Yeah, people have been really mean about this movie, you know, because look, if you're one of those people out there who was uncomfortable by it and you decided to leave in the middle of the movie, or you decided just to skip it altogether because it made you uncomfortable for some reason, that's okay. That's actually fine. It's your money. You can spend it how you want. And if you don't want to sit in the movie, you don't have to. It's not an airplane. Okay. You can get up and leave. And anybody out there who thinks they need to insult somebody because they got up and left the movie, like, you're just being a jackass.
I agree. I think that if you left halfway through the movie, then you missed the best part of the movie, which I don't know if you guys agree with that at all, but I think that the last act was by far
so much stronger. But if the first half made you uncomfortable and you wanted to leave, the second half's not going to do any better.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're not seeing the beat. Yeah, but you're not seeing the a guy that's already in a bad shape get beat down and beat down and beat down even more.
No, you're not. You're seeing him violently murder multiple people.
Which, for a lot of people, is something we see in movies a lot. So that's not something that, you know.
I'm not sure which part of the movie is better. I can say that the third act is certainly more interesting and engaging. The first two acts are the slower parts that I had mentioned earlier. But, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, though, like, there were, you know, legitimate threats for movie theaters, for violence. There were suspicious characters. There were theaters that got evacuated. Those are real things.
There was extra
happened.
Cops at the theater when I went, there, and that was on a Monday night. Yeah. So,
and so, you know, even for me, like, we saw it at 10 a.m. on a Sunday in a fairly nice area, and I still, every time someone got up from their seats or walked to a seat, I noticed. I usually don't, you know, but
I'm giving the benefit of the doubt that that's not the movie's fault. And
no, it's definitely not.
You know,
it's not.
So
I just don't think
it sucks that's yeah. I just feel bad because a lot of people, including Joaquin Phoenix, did do a lot of work for this movie, and it sucks that, you know, the U.S. Army issued had to like, I'm not saying it was unnecessary, but they issued this warning, and that all these police departments were saying that there were threats, and there were probably legitimate threats. But, you know, it's unfortunate.
There were some theaters that got evacuated. There was one, I think it was in New York. A guy with a backpack just walked in the middle of the movie and stood at the bottom by the screen and just, like, surveyed the crowd for a few minutes until people got uncomfortable and left. Like, was he going to hurt anybody? Maybe not. Was he just being a troll? Maybe. Was he just trying to find someone and he stumbled into the wrong screen room? Also possible, right? So
the problem is, good things get ruined by bad people. It's the same argument that has been happening with, like, the okay symbol. Is it, you know, just meaning okay, or is it also being used by white supremacists to mean white power? Like, the thing is, you know, the swastika used to mean something completely different, but in the 1940s, some terrible people turned it into
a hate symbol.
So people ruin things, and it sucks, and sometimes we have to go with it and other times we can fight it. But,
well, that's why I want to commend, like, when there are really great things about the movie, you know, and make sure that the people, you know, we can't recognize every single person, obviously, but there were really good things in this movie, and I do feel that, you know, it's unfortunate. I always hate to see somebody that put a lot of work into something and then that get,
I mean, 2,000 people work on a feature film these days. Yeah. You know, are they all bad people? No. Are they all good people? No. But it certainly seemed like
that,
people
that is
tried
completely
hard.
Evident by this. Like, I'm not going to change my opinion on Todd Phillips. He's a douche. He's a total douche. And
he's making, like, everybody else look bad that was involved in the movie.
But Joaquin Phoenix, who has had a really troubled past, has constantly proved to us that he is a fantastic actor. He deserves every bit of accolades for this movie that he is going to get, whether that's an Oscar or a Golden Globe, or whether it's just some stellar reviews. I don't know what that's going to be, but he deserves it.
And
he 100% deserves it.
To go back on what we mentioned, I think it was last week, the thing that happened on set that was leaked was a prank that was set up.
Oh, was that actually officially?
Yeah. So you were right. And I think it's important that we note that, because
what was it?
He, like, yelled at somebody on set.
Yeah, on Jimmy Kimmel, he was like, oh, your director, Todd Phillips, he sent over this clip of something that happened on set. We just want to get your thoughts on it. And then he played it, and it's Joaquin Phoenix, like, chewing somebody out.
Got it.
Well, not chewing somebody out, talking about a guy on set that's, like, spreading rumors and calling him names and things like that, and how he didn't
like it.
And I had suspicions that it was probably a prank. I didn't follow it, so
that came out earlier today that it was indeed a prank, you know. And
did they
so,
show, like, a longer clip where Jimmy Kimmel was sitting right there or something, because that's what he usually does?
I didn't see that. I read an article about it, but it was more of just, you know, there haven't really been reports of Phoenix really doing anything,
pulling a Christian Bale.
Yeah, right, exactly. And so I don't want to paint, he's not the Joker, he's not Arthur Fleck or whatever, you know. But you know, also, if you don't want to see the movie or you left because you were uncomfortable,
that's
okay,
fine.
Too.
Yeah, you're allowed
and
to do that.
If you watched it and it was your favorite movie ever, I mean, okay.
But I want to say that if you came into the last half hour of the movie and brought your 6-year-old daughter in,
you have a problem, man.
You really need to reevaluate your life, because that actually happened at the theater when I was there. We had two parents and they brought a 6-year-old in right for the scene when he's in the on the show with Murray, right at the beginning of that. So
you know those assholes just got out of like a bomb or they something and wanted a free.
They did not pay for that movie because they were not in the theater. Then there was like 5 people in the theater when I saw it, so it was mostly empty. There were plenty of empty seats. They just stood in the back for a little bit and watched, and then they went and found a seat. And I could not believe it. I almost wanted to go say something to somebody, but then I would have missed like the entire climax of the movie. Yeah. And it's not my responsibility to parent their kid, but that is not a movie for kids.
It's not. This is definitely, it's very dark. It's gritty. It's disturbing. It's sad.
Not an inspiring movie. I hope it's not an inspiring movie anyway. I'm sure there's people out there that might find it that way, but It's a movie that does cover some serious topics, maybe not in the best way, but
No, it's a very serious movie. Yes.
Do you guys think that it warrants a sequel?
No.
I don't either.
I mean, it's like when they made American Psycho 2 and you're like, "What?"
Yeah, with Mila Kunis.
Yeah.
I never actually saw that one. No, I mean, I know that Phoenix is on board to do it again, and I'm not saying that he couldn't do another good job, right? Because who knows what that script would be.
What other story is there to tell?
I mean, you could do the time jump and have him actually confront Batman, but it just, I don't know.
I would
that
be more interested in seeing an Arkham Asylum movie. Like, actually seeing a group with some other inmates. Like,
do you think they would do that, though? This movie was so disconnected from Batman that I feel like...
But I think if you, like, picture One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest or Girl Interrupted, but with Batman villains. And it could be really interesting and really cool. And Batman doesn't have to be in it.
But
it's
they
just
won't
like,
do, Warner Brothers will not do that disconnected from Pattinson or whatever Batman universe. There's no way they're going
to
introduce all those
To be
characters.
Honest, I'm not sure how disconnected it really needs to be at this point. Because while Batman's not in the movie, obviously, and the Waynes are not super important to the overall plot of the film, the climax of the movie includes Bruce's parents being gunned down in the same way we've seen it happen 100
Although
times.
Although this time it was from a riot. And I didn't get to say that earlier, but I actually kind of like that. That it wasn't just like a random act of violence. Well, I mean, it was, but there was like a political riot.
Well, it wasn't random.
Going
the guy
on.
Was specifically going for Thomas Wayne. And
there was no question about that.
Yeah. And that's a very different thing from just trying to rob a couple of people.
Just a mugger. Like,
well, that whole thing could have been like filled with rich people, just like we saw earlier. Like, that was one of the things I was really impressed with, because the whole like rich versus the poor. Earlier when Arthur confronts Thomas in the bathroom at the showing of the Charlie Chaplin movie, I loved that. I love that outside people were cold and protesting and, you know, they down on their luck. And then you go in and there's these happy, rich people pretending like nothing's the matter. Because, like, that
it
is real life.
Of all that,
Well, to your point about how the shooting happens at the end with Bruce's parents, the way it was framed and the way it was happening and the talks of all the twists, by that point there hadn't been like a ton of twists. I was like, holy shit, they're just going to kill Bruce and they are going to do like a
flashpoint. I kind of hoped
thing.
That was going to happen too, but it was fine the way they handled it. Murdering a child would have been a little bit much probably for this movie. Like, you already...
It's fair.
You know,
I mean, it was some random guy, though. Like, we didn't know the other character or anything like that. So in my head, like, the way it was just ramped up,
I actually
like,
thought the same thing.
And that, I mean, at least then
you
not,
know you're in an alternate universe, at least.
And then you can kind of do any stories you really want, because Flashpoint, what we know about Flashpoint, is fairly limited. So,
yeah.
All right. Do you guys have any final thoughts?
No, I think we've taken a long time to cover a lot of things.
Well, this movie had a lot of talking points. So.
There's no post-credit scene.
Yeah,
for anybody.
I knew that, so I didn't even.
We didn't
credits either. Hit, I was booking it.
Same here.
All right, so do we want to do like our final grades, letter grades? We used to do that.
Sure. I mean, that's fine with me.
You go first, always.
Not always, but I'd give it probably a B, which I know is higher than you guys, but I think I enjoyed it more than you guys.
Probably.
And at least I found more to like in it than you guys did. So,
I see.
I was actually going to give it a C too. Basically, it gets brought up by Phoenix's performance, and the cinematography is really wonderful. The soundtrack and score are pretty solid, except for that one glitter track. But otherwise, you know why it would have been brought down. So. You know, somewhere between a C and a B, I guess, for us. Okay, Ray?
All right, so let's finish this up. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Next week, join us for a bad movie review where we talk about Super Mario Brothers.
The movie.
The movie. Sorry, okay.
Bob Hoskins.
Thank you. You can follow Screen Heroes at Screen Heroes Pod on Twitter. You can follow Ryan at Buster Props on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can follow me at Siren Ray on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can follow Derek at The Star Trek Dude on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can follow all of the Heroes Podcast Network at heroespodcast.com. We are available again on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you didn't know, we are also on Twitch every Tuesday night doing this podcast. And now we are on Facebook Live as well. So join us weekly on Tuesdays. Lastly, we have a Patreon. It's all right, guys. You know, if you like us, throw us a dollar here and there. It just lets us know that you want us to keep going. Like, share, and subscribe. We'll catch you next time.
Quick, you have 1 minute. What did you think of Ed Norton wanting a Dark Hulk film that Disney or Marvel told him no?
I liked Edward Norton as Bruce Banner, so I wanted that, but I might even like him a little bit better than Ruffalo.
Really?
Yeah. Hot take.
That's hurtful.
Is it? I like Ruffalo. I just like Edward Norton, and I know he's a jerk, but...
Yeah, I really liked The Incredible Hulk. I know, just quality-wise, it is a little bit lower than a lot of what other stuff is out there for the MCU. I like
that he cared so much about it that he wanted to go through the script himself and rewrite things. And well, he does that with a lot of his movies. Movie?
No.
But the director and him Louis, did not get along.
Okay, that's what it was.
The guy who just did Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance directed it. Yeah,
I see the similarities.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
CGI hasn't improved.
He's certainly
Hulk's tongue was really distracting the whole movie. Ouch.
He's certainly not the worst part of the Hulk movie for me. I just don't really care for that movie across the board.
No, Liv Tyler and Tim Roth did pretty amazing.
All right, here we go. Going back.